Hello, friends. Welcome to Unmuted Generations. I'm Ryan Mew, and in each episode, we focus on expanding our horizons and personal knowledge of the world to cultivate a happy and healthy lifestyle. My guest this week is none other than Joyce Guan West. She is the founder of Coaching with Empathy, a strategic coaching firm, and has a background as a serial entrepreneur, startup executive, and vice president of sales, just to name a few. More importantly, she is a role model to plenty of Asian Americans, coaching them to level up in leadership and eventually push them to the next level so they could pursue careers in the C-suite. As an Asian American myself, it's beautiful to see diversity and representation within my own race. So thanks for coming on, Joyce, and how are you doing today?
Yeah, absolutely, Ryan. Thanks so much for having me. I am a huge fan of your podcast, and I'm doing well and super excited to be here. Very rainy in San Francisco, but you know, I love all types of weather.
Yeah, it's freezing out here in SoCal. But first of all, thank you. You flatter me. I appreciate it. And second of all, I'll start off with this. You know, over the pandemic, there was a lot of bad things that happened, obviously, over the course of 2020. And it seems like it's being brought into 2021 also. But the one thing that I've seen as a benefit is cultivating communities and just being able to connect with others. And a lot of Asian Americans we've seen to kind of connect with each other over our journeys to at an even more rapid pace as this pandemic gone forward. And a lot of us are kind of pursuing new career advancement, whether it's through our personal traditional careers, or whether it's starting up a side business or leaving your toxic workplace to be somewhere that'll make you happier and more fulfilled in general. And obviously, you know, you are a coach in that aspect. You do help individuals get to that next level. So for those who don't necessarily know what you do, other than just the word coach, I was wondering if you could give a brief description about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, Ryan, you've articulated really well when everything that we've known and that we've known to be a stable thing that we can count on starts to go away, and the number of certain things in the world and the number of things we can depend on as being stable just start to decrease, it really causes a lot of people to question everything, right? And reinvent themselves. And so I'll tell you a little bit about my personal journey with coaching. I started my first business when I was 19 and I was a student at UC Berkeley, and I was a little bit bored with classes, and I took this entrepreneurship class. And it got me really into the tech industry and, you know, web design and web development. And so I started a web design and web development firm with three of my friends. And we ended up running that company all throughout school. And since we didn't really know that much about working with customers and sales, we actually hired a sales coach for me. And I was actually a really super shy kid. And it, even, you know, in my freshman and sophomore year of college, I was really shy. But compared to my engineer friends, I was still the most presentable person. And,
yeah. Of course, engineers, right?
Yes. So I was still the person who was best at talking with other people and talking with customers. So I was given the sales role, and, you know, I was the account manager and the project manager. And so we did a really smart thing, which was we hired a sales coach for me. And so at 19, that was my first time having experience with coaching, and it really blew me away. There's this guy who ran training classes and sales classes, and then also did one-on-one coaching with me. And he taught me so much in a short amount of time, and it really helped our sales skyrocket. And I don't really know how successful that business would have been without that coaching and that education, because I really didn't know enough about sales and psychology and people and sales process and how to be a business person without that education. So that was my first journey. And then someone that I met in the sales class, there were two other coaches in that class. There is someone who's a business coach and then someone who is a career and life coach. And a year later, when I went through a really bad breakup and also some career stuff, I contacted, you know, one of the people who is in the class, and he helped me work through the challenges I had. So a lot of coaching can come in lots of different forms. One is coaching can really help you get clear on what it is that you're looking for in life, especially when you have life or like business or career transitions. And you say, okay, you know, something unexpected happened. How do I navigate this? Oh, wow, I've kind of just been sleepwalking and I haven't been making a lot of intentional choices. It's time to take a step back and just really think strategically and take inventory and get some help sorting through all of these emotions and thoughts and feelings, right? Because we all have our blind spots. And so that's one of the things that a coach can do. A coach can save you months, if not years of time, just trying to figure it out yourself. The other thing that coaches can do is coaches can help you build up skills. So in the case of my sales coach, I learned just so much about technique and I saved years of time making mistakes. And like through the training that I got in the one-on-one coaching where we talked about different deals and different client situations, my coach just said, yeah, I've seen this, you know, 100 times before. What you're not doing and why things aren't connecting is X, Y, or Z. And that was invaluable. So I feel like coaches enable you to live many, many more lifetimes than you would if you were just on your own going at your normal speed.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I mean, time is such a finite number, first of all. And I always kind of, it's so funny because when you look at it, when we were all kids, a lot of us were enrolled in sports, or if not sports, maybe like a musical class. And we had a coach or a teacher where you could kind of call that a coach at the same time, where they taught you skills. But if we were just simply thrown into it and they're like, hey, shoot a basketball, like I may be doing it the wrong way. I personally, for me, like I wasn't able to start shooting a basketball correctly until I had a guy who offered to be like a personal coach for me. And then I was able to start shooting with one hand as opposed to two and just making a lot more shots. But the point of that is that I think you made such a good point in terms of just streamlining your process and showing you skills. Like it's not just applicable to sports, it's applicable to like actual life, because I don't want to try to watch master classes or anything like that. I'd rather just learn from the best. I know you were kind of also saying that you basically grabbed your first coach when you were 19 years old.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Were you familiar, like did you know this guy was like the right person to be a coach, or like how should people generally approach and hiring a coach, regardless of how young or how tenured they are?
Yeah, that's a great question. And by the way, I have a question for you. Have you ever had a coach?
In terms of like a life coach?
Yeah, or you mentioned having a basketball coach. Outside of that, have you ever been coached by anyone else?
You know, I wouldn't say I've had a coach. I've had like therapists and mentors who I've gone to, but I haven't had an actual, I guess, just dedicated coach who I'm like, this is the person I need to be with, just because I feel like for me personally and my career trajectory so far, like I graduated college 2 years ago. I'm still in the process of figuring out what I want to do. So of course I could obviously streamline that, but I'm at this point right now where I'm more focused on building skills as opposed to saying like, hey, you know, this is the next step. But you know, I'm curious, since you started so young, like, do you feel like it's necessary even for an individual who could be, you know, in Gen Z per se?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a good question. I would say that definitely there's a good balance in that there's one coach I was introduced to who's a really high-end coach, and he costs $3,700 for 2 hours of coaching a month. So it works out to thousands of dollars per hour. And I talked to him because my friend really recommended him and loves him, and you know, hired him as a coach, and he's gotten great results. And I talked to him and I thought he had some great ideas, but also I really felt like, you know what? Like he's not knocking my socks off so much that I can see him 10xing or 20xing my revenues. And I really enjoy learning, and I also enjoy experiential learning, and I love to get my hands dirty and do things myself. So I actually just said, you know what, I'm pretty sure I'll hire him at some point. And when I've exhausted everything that I know and that I can do, I'll go to him and say, you know, look, my sales are plateauing, or I'm just going bonkers, like I can't scale, like help. But before that, I really want to get my knee skin first. Like I kind of like that. And I think what you're saying is I want to experience for myself, understanding what I don't know. And that's a valuable process. And it's a valuable self-discovery process in and of itself. So sometimes you can hire a coach too early, right?
Yeah, that's a really good point. I, you know, in a society that we live in where we want immediate gratification in pretty much everything, I think a lot of times it's just important to go through the experience. Like, obviously, we could be directed and say, like, hey, this career will make you X amount of dollars and you'll be happy. But most of the time for me, I found that when I follow a path that I'm told will find me success and then I meet it, it's just like I don't get the same sense of fulfillment. Yeah. I may achieve it, but it's like internally, I may not be as happy. So I guess as a coach, when you work with your clients or you have like a prospect call per se, like, do you ever just make sure that your goals align with each other?
Yeah, that's a good question. And so you asked me two really good questions. One was, how would I suggest hiring or interviewing a coach? And then secondly, how do I assess whether someone is a good fit? And I would say that to answer that second question, I would describe my coaching as more like jazz than classical. In that there are certain coaches who say, I have a framework and a process, and I'm going to treat every single client who comes through the door exactly the same. And to me, you know, the reason I love coaching and the reason I love people, and I've been in a sales career for most of my career, is I find people so interesting. And I love how everyone is truly a unique snowflake. And of course, there are certain archetypes and you see different patterns, but I will just talk to anyone because I love just the discovery of understanding who someone is and what makes them tick. And so for me, when I do a discovery call, usually it's a half hour call, and I just ask someone, why did you want to get on this phone call? You know, what's going on with you? You know, what are your goals? Like, what's going well? What are your challenges? And where are you looking for support? And then I let them then describe their situation. And a really good coach should just ask a lot of questions. Because ultimately, what I'm doing is not telling someone how they should feel or what's going on with their situation. But coaching is kind of like your basketball analogy. I'm here to help someone else develop their own muscles. So over time, the training wheels come off and they start helping themselves more and more. Of course, they may work with me for a long time, but you know, every time we work together, we're working on more advanced skills. And hopefully people who are working with me are making that transition of going from, okay, I got to ask Joyce about this on our next call, to, oh, like, what was that thing that Joyce said? Let me ask the question of myself and start coaching myself.
Yeah, I wouldn't want to be molded personally and say, here's the magic formula. Like, I would want to be molded in the form that I want to be molded into, whether it's right or wrong, because you really, there's really no indication of success. Like, people can make tons of money. Money is awesome. It does lead you to do things that are capable of freedom, like traveling or buying a nice house, taking care of your family or your grandkids down the line. But like, we've seen plenty of rich people just be like unhappy with themselves. It really does require a balance. And I think it does involve a lot of curiosity in your end when you're working with your clients. Were you always this curious, or did you kind of just develop that skill? Or I would call it a skill, actually. It is a skill to be curious and go into different areas that you may be not so comfortable with.
Yeah, that's a great question. So the sales system that I trained on early on, and now I've trained on many other sales systems as well, but the one I started with is a system called the Sandler system. And it's all about being really curious and asking questions. And in fact, when I was the VP of sales and hiring for my sales teams, curiosity was one of the traits that we would most prioritize in hiring. And in our interview process, we would typically do a role play. And if that candidate was in the role play and they were not asking a lot of questions and not constantly going two or three levels deeper into a question and just accepting the first level answer, then that would indicate that they weren't really curious enough. And typically in sales, the thing that a customer or prospect comes to you and what they say they think their problem is typically isn't. And so discovery is really important. So sales and coaching are actually fairly similar in a lot of ways. And I would say that it's really interesting because I think back to my childhood and I realized that I'm really just the same person I was as a kid. I was the kid who would always finish my homework early in class and I'd finish assignments early in class. And so then I would end up helping my friends and my classmates. And so I've always had a lot of extra resources. And there's a point where you don't really need anything else for yourself, right? And what's really brought me pleasure and fulfillment and enjoyment in life is helping the people around me. And I consider myself to be a very, very happy and joyful person. I discovered meditation about 7 years ago, and I'm actually about to start a 2-year mindfulness meditation teacher training.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, I'm so excited because it's really changed my perspective to the point where I was asked to give a talk about resilience, at a major Fortune 500 company. And meditation just smooths everything out where you can always just see a situation as existing, but you don't have to put the judgment on it of, oh, this is good or this is bad. It just is. And you're just living in the poignancy of just the magic of being.
So I love that.
I try to share with other people too, because it's such a wonderful, blissful feeling to feel like that. And I want to share it.
That's so good. I feel like a lot of times we think of career trajectory or just advancement, or just even getting into your dream job is like a ladder. Like you have to keep climbing, climbing. And some people even think of meditation as you're sitting down and your legs are crossed and you're just like closing your eyes and you're going like, it doesn't work like that, you know? Several different types of meditation. I feel like there's a lot of different forms of meditation. Personally, for me, I do yoga.
I
do a lot of yoga, restorative, and I feel like you were saying yoga for me, personally, it doesn't just help flexibility in the body and being healthy physically, but just also mentally. It's really important. I wish more people practiced it. But what got you into your meditation journey? Because you said you started 7 years ago. Did you just happen to dabble onto it?
Yeah, that's a great question. So, and by the way, on the yoga, I would say that it's really amazing to me how many business problems or, like challenges for clients I've solved while doing yoga. It's so strange. Like it puts your mind into a different place and you just think differently.
Have you ever done hot yoga by any chance?
I have. Yeah. Yeah.
That's the yoga I love. When obviously we're in the pandemic, I like doing that. And then there's even, I know there's Bikram and then there's also just hot yoga.
Right.
My studio does hot yoga sculpt where it's not really Bikram. It's more of what it is you're doing just traditional yoga poses, but you're using weights. And the reason why I love
it so much.
Yeah, I know. It's crazy. But kind of what you were saying was that when you're faced with a really big problem, it seems so little when you're in a 100 degree room and lifting weights, And then you just leave and you're like, none of this, it matters, but it's not like, I'm not going to lose my livelihood over this.
Yeah. And I think a great word to describe what you just mentioned is perspective. We're so small and our problems are so insignificant in the context of the entire universe.
Yeah. Hot yoga is just very restorative in my mind. And I think it's kind of necessary for all of us. Like when you work with some of your clients, I know sometimes when you're talking with them, you're trying to share traditional business tips and how to level up and skills. But how would you describe your approach to helping people level up? Is it just solely skill-based or are you helping them also with things like meditation or taking a break or, you know, not overworking, not burning out?
Yeah, that's a great question. So I would say along the lines of how I describe my coaching as jazz, not classical, I am highly intuitive and I'm also an empath, which means I can feel other people's emotions and feelings. And so, you know, one thing that's very important to me is I do not work with people who have experienced a lot of trauma or who are severely depressed. But I'm not saying I don't work with anyone who hasn't encountered difficulties, right? We all have.
Yeah, we all have trauma.
Yes, yes. But the people who are best served with a therapist and who, you know, struggle to get out of bed or are very challenged, those are really tough for me. But I would say that along the lines of jazz, not classical, because I'm highly intuitive, and that's why I think I ended up in sales, right? I could really read the room and know like what people needed and how to really talk with them and understand their needs and then present the right solution. It's the same thing with coaching. And there are several different layers of coaching, right? Sometimes someone comes to me, the two most common situations are someone comes to me and they say, I have no idea what I want in my career or what I want to do next in terms of what direction I should be taking my business in, or I'm not really sure what the next step is in my job. I'm kind of happy, but you know, what does the career path look like? So I help people get clear on that. And usually that's a combination of talking through the different options and asking questions and helping them build decision trees to make logical decisions, as well as connecting with them with their emotions and also what really brings them meaning in life and what makes them happy and what makes them energized. And I think for Asian Americans, especially for so long, we oftentimes do exactly what our parents tell us to do, right? And they have a certain blueprint for success. Work hard, don't rock the boat, don't create any conflict. Do something that's a quote unquote safe career. And so a lot of people come to me in their late 20s or you know, early to mid 30s and they say, I am so bored. And I realize I haven't been happy in my career almost forever. Or I keep making these lateral moves, but I'm not really excelling or succeeding. And I'm so far away from really rocking it. Or, you know, I think I might want to do this side hustle or start my own business because I'm not really finding the satisfaction. So I really help people on both levels, right? Making the decisions, but also connecting in with what really creates meaning, which is not just around like, what is the job or the career or the money or the business goal? It's really around, is your purpose in life and your why for existing around helping people? Is it around the environment? Is it around innovation and like crazy new technologies? Yeah. Find that why.
Next Elon Musk.
Yeah, it could be. Yeah, exactly. Elon Musk. So once you find that why and you know what's at your core and you connect with who you are, then the rest just kind of falls in place.
Yeah, I know that generally we have that little misconception that, or you know, it's just a general understanding that there are a lot of Asians where they get into career paths to make their family happy and stuff. I've been very, very fortunate that my family, they've always wanted me to pursue like my best, like, hey, do what makes you happy because that's what's important at the end of the day. But I also know that there are other circumstances out there where individuals, they may have had parents who immigrated from like the Vietnam War, for example.
Yeah.
And they come down here and they're like, look, like, we don't want you to go through what we went through, you know, just try to follow this career path. And Asian American white collar professionals are literally the least likely group to be promoted from individual contributor roles into management. We make up like 12% of the workforce, even though we only make up 6% of the population. And our rate in America, we're growing. We went from 11.9 million people in 2000 to 20.4 million people in 2015. Like that's a 72%. Growth increase. Yeah, we're very represented throughout America. And I think now we're just starting to see, of course, with the pandemic and communities like Asian Hustle Network, but we're starting to see really a growth in Asian entrepreneurship. And also just going up the career ladder, but how important is community and really just that diversity and inclusion aspect when you're trying to find new clients and stuff?
Yeah, so the Asian American community and the networks are really great. And I think because of the way that certain immigration policies happen, most Asian Americans, and like not all, but many Asian Americans come from more educated families. And hence, you know, some of this has really contributed to the model minority myth, right?
Yeah.
So
educated, we do no wrong, you know,
in terms of the networks, right? And understanding how to, you know, leverage and, you know, build those opportunities. So I've been thinking a lot about that stat that you just shared, and that's around the underrepresentation of Asian Americans in leadership and in executive positions in the C-suite in corporate America, and even in startups. And that is something that I'm very concerned about, and also that I'm very passionate about changing. And I do see that even within a generation, so many things can change, and even from, say, Gen Y to Gen Z. And so I'm also very hopeful. So my diagnosis of why those numbers are really low in terms of Asian American leadership representation is twofold. One is that through oftentimes through unconscious bias, Asian Americans are not, quote unquote, seen as management material or as leaders. And so we're tapped less frequently to apply for these roles. And then secondly, I think a lot of Asian Americans also hold themselves back. And there's also some socialization and cultural understanding and leveling up that also, you know, enable that are enabling people to hold themselves back. For instance, part of the problem is we're maybe not recruited actively or tapped to apply for these roles. But the other part of it is that when these roles become available, the imposter syndrome might kick in, and a lot of Asian Americans are not even seeing themselves as possibly qualified to apply. So I think we need to address it from both angles, right? We need to have more like kind of affirmative action in terms of leaders being developed and specific programs that support that, or, you know, providing coaches to more young professionals and helping them build those skills. And then secondly, people internally need to believe in themselves as well. And I think part of what I do is I try to be out there and like use my voice to show people that it is possible and be an example.
Yeah, I see that point a lot too, because we see it a lot on social media now. Like maybe 10 or 15 years ago, there wasn't anything like Asian communities, or we didn't even know who CEOs were per se, you know? Now with social media, I could connect with people like you over Instagram by sending you a DM or somebody I look up to. But like you said, it's kind of twofold. Like a lot of times, and I think same type of thing, when I do this podcast and I reach out to somebody who may have, I don't know, maybe 12,000 followers on Instagram, where they're the CEO of this company, I get scared, even though I know I have all the materials prepared, but I don't know if it's an imposter syndrome thing specifically linked to being an Asian American so much as it is with things like social media, how I'm seeing other people be successful, and especially in my generation.
Yeah, thanks for sharing. And I think imposter syndrome and just feeling like there's another level that's sort of scary, maybe unattainable, or potentially something that you're going to reach for or go for and fail at, that's always scary. And I think for me personally, I knew at age 19 that I was really passionate about coaching and I loved everything about coaching. But what stopped me and what caused me to not pursue that dream for many, many years is I didn't see anyone who looked like me who was a coach. I don't think I met an Asian coach until a couple years ago.
Well, especially, I mean, I've interviewed an organization before named In Her Purpose. Mm-hmm. They're called In Her Purpose,
yeah.
Asian American Women Empowerment. And we were joking because McKinsey, which is a huge consulting firm, they did they did a study on representation, like C-level suite representation. And they were talking about how different races were pretty much, they could have been pushed into higher levels, but they weren't, especially a woman. And they didn't once mention Asian American women. Like, it was astounding to me. Obviously, there were other racial injustices during that time that were important, but still, like I said it before, Asians make up a huge portion of the population. There shouldn't be a reason why we aren't represented more in these C-level positions. And if part of it is because of, hey, we don't have that mentality just going for it, it's something we have to cultivate, like a mindset. How did you cultivate your mindset to just kind of jump into things after, you know, because you've had several interesting careers from starting a business in college and then going into sales, and now you're a coach.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think for me, it's that, like, part of it for me is just the way I was born. I think things have been very easy for me most of my life, and learning has just come very naturally to me. And so I would say that I have an extreme growth mindset. And people around me will oftentimes tell me, oh, that's impossible. And I'll say, oh, really? Watch me. So I have a very healthy self-esteem. And thinking about it, I think one of the most powerful ways of building your confidence and a healthy self-esteem is to constantly set yourself up for success. When you have that virtuous cycle where you have success after success after success and you're getting positive feedback, then it just really becomes internalized. And you just realize, well, almost all the time, things are going to work out. And if they don't work out, you know, there's a little bit of variety there and it's okay. And I think I was just really blessed with having a lot of positive feedback growing up, and then just being really good at things, like, means you don't get a lot of negative feedback. And so you build your confidence, and then you have a lot of courage to try new things, and you realize, oh, this is really fun and interesting. And then one day, I think, you know, just somewhere along the way, I just realized it's really boring to do everything perfectly. I'd rather just take a bunch of risks and do interesting things, which is why I was an entrepreneur for a long time. My parents' chagrin.
Yeah, I'm just kind of I didn't have that success growth mentality at all. You know, when I was in high school, I wasn't very focused as a student. I was more concerned with, like, getting a girlfriend, being popular, all that shenanigans and stuff. And, like, with me, I think I experienced so much, like, failure just from that educational standpoint that I eventually just got to a point where I'm like, okay, I don't care. I'm just going to go balls out and really just try everything I could potentially do and start trying new things and try new study methods. I remember I'd be, like, in school and there'd be people traditionally cramming before finals, like, literally just worrying and freaking out. And they'd always be like, how are you watching, like, YouTube videos right now? Like, this is for 30% of our grade. But I would always just go in with that mentality, kind of similar to what you were saying, that, look, I've already failed before and I've gone back up. Like, you can knock me down every time. I'm going to get back up even stronger, like a little chip on my shoulder, I guess. And I'm just like, okay, well, once I get back up, I'm going to make sure that I come back stronger and a better version of myself. And I've learned personally more from my failures than the amount of successes I've had. And I think that's a big thing with just any community in general. Like, sometimes we're afraid to fail and afraid to make mistakes and try new things. And it's okay to make mistakes. And I guess I'm just wondering, as a career coach, like, what are some of the misconceptions people have, like, when they are trying to get to that next level? Because I'm assuming that a lot of individuals think it's just like almost like a yellow brick road, and they walk through it and then they get to the top, and then that's it. And that's, like, their life.
Yeah. Yeah. That's such a great statement, in that it's always an ongoing journey, and life is an ongoing journey where you generally are constantly learning. Like, there is no point where you say, oh, I've arrived and now I'll just bask and coast in happiness, right? Because once you achieve one level of happiness, then in order to stay happy, you have to get to the next level, right? unless you meditate and you do yoga and you learn to just be. Going back to one thing you mentioned a little bit earlier, I think the topic of failure is actually really pivotal. I find that I actually love failing because I like the variety of learning from something not going exactly the way I expect it to. And I think I get bored easily. And so I actively put myself in interesting situations.
The same way too. I get bored really. And I'm always that type of person where I have like a million hobbies. Like I know how to DJ. I know how to do photography. I'm like a thrill seeker. And I don't know about you personally, but with me, because I feel like I have this tolerance to just try new things. Like it's helped me even overcome some of my fears. Like I used to be afraid of heights. And then I went skydiving because I'm just like, okay, I could do this, you know? And
yeah.
I mean, obviously people have different levels of risk in getting past things, but I feel like it's kind of a lifestyle to go experience failure and success. Mm-hmm. Like you have to be tolerant to it.
Yeah. And when you have the high highs and the low lows, it makes life so rich and poignant. Yeah. So on the topic of failure, what I find with a lot of my Asian American clients is they are sometimes so afraid to make even the tiniest mistake. And that really paralyzes people, right? It paralyzes people in terms of blocking their feelings of joy and enjoyment because they're feeling so anxious. And it also prevents people from taking risks. And sometimes to get to that next level, you have to take some risks. Or you have to use your powers of influence and relationship building and really show your personality and be a persona to get to that next level, especially when it comes to leadership or when it comes to influencing people. It's not just about keeping your head down and working hard.
Yeah, that's a good point. How big are you with like things like safety nets, though? Like maybe getting to that next level, like some people, they may be working a sustainable 9-to-5 and then they want to be an entrepreneur. How much of a safety net, or like depending on what career they decide to pursue, like how important do you think is like a safety net to some individuals who are trying to be more risky or not risky, but just take chances, I would say?
Yeah. Yeah. Certainly, I think I have met a number of people who have put all their eggs in one basket. And the startup they thought was going to do really well isn't doing well. There are a whole range of coaches out there, right? There are coaches who are really, really successful. And then there are people who really want to coach, but you know, have trouble signing on clients, or they have trouble holding on to their clients. And it can be a very hard business as well. And so people are like just barely scraping by, or yeah, they're driving Lyft and they're really burnt out. And so I would say that when it comes to making those transitions and going from your 9-to-5 to side hustle to jumping to that business full time, it makes sense to take run experiments and treat it as a side hustle at first, if possible. You know, obviously, sometimes that's not possible. You have to go straight to raising a ton of money if your idea is something that costs a lot to build, right? It's a really complex software project or requires hardware and buying a lot of equipment and materials. But if there's a way to prototype it and try it out and get product market fit and get some traction and still work your 9-to-5, that's probably one of the best ways of doing it. Because anytime you're operating from a place of scarcity, then again, you can't take risks or you're so stressed out, you totally miss the opportunity. I'll tell you one story about my own scarcity in a way. It's a form of a scarcity story. So back in 2014, my company that I sold back in 2017, we were a distributor to corporate offices of healthy snacks and beverages. And this was after our third pivot, and we had started the company back in 2010. And one of our customers was a startup called Coinbase. And so they actually would pay us in Bitcoin. And I think over the course of a year, they paid us $100,000 or $200,000 worth of Bitcoin. And they were paying for the snacks in Bitcoin. Being a cash-strapped startup, we actually would receive the Bitcoin and then we would cash it out immediately and use the cash. And at that time, the Bitcoin was worth $140.
Oh, it's so much now.
Yeah. And so, you know, I probably wouldn't be working if we had held on to like any of that, you know, like that's what happens when you're a cash strapped startup, right? You need the cash and you make certain decisions because of that.
Yeah. But I feel like that's kind of like everything. Like we could always look back and like, for example, you know, if you're in college and you decide to go to a nightclub and then you end up spending $200 on drinks and then you check at your bank account after. Like you could always look back and be like, oh man, you know, I could have just not gone and done this. But like, at least if you ever get Bitcoin again, you'll be able to keep it for one part. And I think the second thing is I feel like there's a certain fun aspect like living life like that, you know? Like a decision doesn't always have to be like the smartest, most successful decision out there. And I'm not trying to, for those who are listening, I'm not trying to say, oh, get that tattoo that's going to piss everybody off or something, or get a tattoo of somebody who you've been dating for a month, nothing like that. But it's just more like, you know, your decision in foresight, it doesn't need to mean be this level to, it doesn't need to lead to like your road of success. Like I feel like it's genuinely important for people to have interests like outside of work, similar to what you were saying with like meditation and relaxation and things like that. And personally, I think that there are a lot of people that embrace the hustle too much today, don't you think?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a weird world out there in that I think some people are in these very, very privileged jobs and they're also very intense, but usually there's a really good financial payout. And then I think there are also a lot of people who are really working very hard and like they're not working for, you know, the billion-dollar unicorns. And that's definitely more of a slog as well. And so what I've observed in the market is there's a larger and larger gap between the uber privileged and everyone else. And so it's kind of an interesting time. And I think a lot of people, including many Asian Americans, like are like working really hard, but you also have to take a step back and make really good decisions and choices. And I think that's where networking comes in and really staying plugged into the really hot companies. So like your friends end up working at awesome places where you can, you know, really get in on an awesome opportunity, get some really good stock that's worth something and do really meaningful, like world-changing work. And so relationships and networking, I think, are more and more important than ever, right? Just getting a job means almost nothing. And I've helped a lot of people negotiate stock option packages and compensation. And it's really, if you land at a Google or at a Facebook or Apple, it's or a Tesla, it's not about the salary, right? I just tell people, look, you know, let's negotiate that minimally, but let's get you, you know, another 100 or 150K in equity. That's your real lottery ticket, right? That could be worth millions later on.
Yeah. And it's baby steps too. Like you were saying, it's networking. It's not necessarily, although resumes are important and everything, it's not sending out 100 applications in 1 week and expecting a callback. It's making those really personable and genuine connections and kind of growing from there. With people who work with you, is that like, what are some of the common misconceptions you generally deal with as like a coach?
Yeah. In terms of common misconceptions, I think one of the biggest and most impactful is that most people, especially if they're not salespeople, don't realize how many people are in their network that can actually help them. And it's a big mindset thing, and it's a big scary thing that people need to get over. That thing of reaching out to people outside of, you know, their best friends, reaching out to people that they're connected with on LinkedIn and in their network, or friend, like looser friends or people who are acquaintances or even friends of friends, to ask for referrals into companies or to ask for even informational interviews so they can learn more about a particular company, a particular industry or product or service category or particular types of roles. So one of the biggest things I do as a career coach is I help people get over that fear. And Ryan, you kind of alluded to this. You can either cold apply to hundreds of jobs and get a couple of interviews. And so I literally will ask people, well, would you rather send out 200 resumes or would you rather just talk to, get over it and talk to 20 people? Because when you talk to 20 people who are in your network, those 20 conversations, each one of them will probably turn into 1 to 3 more intros. And you can just keep doing that and fill your pipeline of interviews.
Yeah. And during this time, it's so crazy. I mean, there are so many unknowns when you're applying to a job. Like if they're even hiring right now, they may have just forgotten to take down that job post because they're going through some budget constraints or something along those lines. I think it's just so important during this time that we shouldn't have the aspect necessarily to try and change the world, but more just focus on our own internal growth. And more than that, if we're already satisfied with the way we are, then spread that joy to others and meet people and create genuine connections. Like whenever I connect with somebody, I'm never trying to say like, okay, I want you to be on the podcast immediately. Like, no, I want to meet them. I want to know them. I want to understand their mindset. And then maybe once I get to know them and I consider them a friend, then I'll invite them on, or I may just keep them in my network. If like back when I didn't have a job, like I would network with people for coffee chats and then I would just make genuine connections. And then I'd say later on, oh, this is your job listing. And people do that with me too. Like when I message somebody, because I'm very happy at the job I'm at right now, and I like try to post and recruit for them every now and then. If somebody messages me and they say, hey, I'm looking for a job, I'm like, that's not the right way to go about it. Like try to actually make a connection with me first. And then I'll like see if your skill set matches up. I'm not just going to like hand you a ticket.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I agree on these conversations that are so transactional don't really work that well. And it doesn't make people feel good. And so what, you know, I think there's one other principle that I coach a lot of my clients on, and which many of my executive level clients who are VPs and C-level execs really get and really want to focus in on, which is personal branding and digital presence. And so, you know, I let people know, hey, like the further up you get in your career and when you're at the executive level, you're not going to be applying cold to any jobs, right? You're either going to be working through your network or you're going to be working with executive recruiters. And sometimes the VP and C-level jobs, they're not really posted because you might be going in to replace someone that the company's going to fire once they find the right candidate to replace, you know, the person who's underperforming. So that's why network is so important. And I also try to impart on my clients the concept that the future is inbound. And what that means is if you're 50 and you're still applying for jobs cold, you really haven't been investing in your network and also your personal branding and your reputation. You know, if you have had a long-standing career and you've invested in posting content on LinkedIn or posting on a blog or writing Medium articles, you should have established yourself as enough of a thought leader that you will have a steady stream of leads and inbound and inquiries or people asking you to be a mentor or an advisor or on their board of directors, such that whenever you're looking, you can contact, you know, any one of dozens of people.
That's a great,
That's really, you know, something that I'm really emphasizing with people and just saying, like, doesn't it suck to be applying cold when you're at your level and now starting to face ageism and all this other stuff? But if you invest in your personal branding and you always have a steady stream of inbound and you're staying active and you're engaged and you're staying on top of your game and staying on top of trend, that's not going to happen to you.
Yeah, digital presence is so big nowadays. And it's not like, I think there's a common misconception that like, hey, the content you create needs to be like business tips and we need to figure out how to improve ROI and everything. Like, no, you could be vulnerable. It could be about mindset. It could be about different aspects, but try to connect it at the end of the day. And that's where people really thrive, when they're able to make those genuine connections. And like you said, have something in their back pocket and in case something ever goes the wrong way. I think it's so important for people not to just talk about business all the time. Like, business is such an important thing, but the way I've made my personal connections is by connecting to them on a interest level, have different interests outside of work, get along with them. I once had a boss say to me that working, it's 30% hard work and stuff, but the other part is like, not necessarily politics, but having really important relationships with people. And I'm really glad to be in that position and also do it by doing different, putting myself out there in different ways, like hosting a Clubhouse event, or maybe doing an IG live and answering questions, or writing LinkedIn content. And I know that, like, for you at least, you're hosting an event soon, if I'm not mistaken, on Valentine's Day, just talking about different aspects of meditation and spirituality. I was wondering if you could go into that a little.
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, I couldn't agree more about the personal branding. And by the way, I've really been loving Clubhouse. There's so many really great focus groups, and there are also a lot of really great Asian American groups. And the conversations that are being had are so real, and they're so authentic, and they're so thoughtful. I'm really enjoying it.
My experiences with me, I was worried about the opposite. I was worried there was going to be a lot of trolls on there just arguing and stuff, especially in this day of age. I mean, everybody, there's a lot of people who have different opinions about different topics. And I just didn't, when I got invited, I was like, okay, I'm going to learn it solely for marketing because I work within marketing and maybe it's an opportunity. But I found it to be a community where it's like helpful with each other. Obviously, you could use it to like meet up with friends and talk that way. But personally, for me, I've been able to connect with a lot of people on there. I've been able to connect with future guests and just really show my personal side. Because with me, at least, like, I'm not sure about you, but I'm not necessarily the best like IG content creator. Like, I don't know what goes viral or anything, or I can't write a LinkedIn post and have it blow up to get a million likes. My skills come from things like podcasting and using my voice and talking to people and getting to know them. So, you know, similar to your event, like, that's the way I put myself out there.
Yeah. I really like Clubhouse because I think that not everyone learns the best or showcases themselves the best through writing. I think some people do, but Clubhouse, especially if you're a speaker or a podcast host or you're a coach like me, the spoken word is actually really the best way to experience who we are and what we do. And I love that, you know, the bar is so low in terms of the effort people have to make in order to get to access us and be able to engage. So I love it. So yeah, I'll tell you, thanks for asking about my event. So as part of my coaching, which is mostly more on the businessy side, the career coaching, executive coaching, and business coaching, what I've learned is that ultimately, whether you call it those types of coaching or not, ultimately what I do is I do all of that. I help people with the practical side of things. But the reason I'm very effective is I have a lot of unconditional love to give. I've been blessed with a lot of that from the people in my life and from my family and from my husband and my two puppies. And ultimately, I coach the whole person, the whole holistic person. And someone who doesn't have confidence or, you know, maybe doesn't have a lot of support in their life, I am that support. And I then teach my client how to support themselves. And that really enables them to excel in their job interviews or get to that next level at work and have the confidence and the joy to feel all these things. So my event, You know, I was just thinking about Valentine's Day and I was thinking like, oh gosh, last year we could all go out, but now everyone's stuck at home and people are really wanting to connect, and people who are couples want to do something special with each other. People who are single are feeling really single. And I was thinking, I've been so blessed in the last year, and I really just want to share the joy and the bliss I feel. And that's how I want to give back this Valentine's Day. And I've been really excited through my journey as a coach. I think with the pandemic, there have been so many things going on online that I've connected with a lot of other coaches. And so I'm putting on Saturday, February 13th, a Divine Valentine's all-day retreat. And it's an entire day of experiences all focused on love. Self-love, love of your inner child, getting connected with your body, and you know, also understanding the laws of attraction and how to hack your brain for love. And then I'll be talking about one of my favorite topics, how to have a grand love affair with prosperity. In other words, how to have a great relationship with your money. I love money. And, you know,
I think everybody does.
Yeah, I think, you know, being Asian, especially, and growing up in an immigrant family, I saw how hard my parents worked, and I truly appreciate every single opportunity that comes to me. And I believe that part of my success is I have a very deep respect for my money, and I also don't like covet it in an unhealthy way. But there's a, if you like truly appreciate and respect money, you can always find ways of generating more of it and have a really joyful relationship with it, and also be able to help others have that. So anyway, the ideas throughout this really wonderful curated journey, and there's also an Akashic Records meditation and healing that we're doing. Like, it's so many different modalities and people get to experience all of that in the context of one day. Typically, you know, an hour of coaching with most of the practitioners in the event would cost between $300 and $500 per hour. And people are getting an all day, you know, 8 or 9 hour experience for $111. And so it's a pretty spectacular day. And ultimately, people are going to leave feeling really good and with so many more tools than before. And it's a great experience to have with your partner, your spouse, like, or friends, or on your own as well.
Yeah. We as humans, I don't think, we could survive without a lot of things. Like some people, they could survive just traveling without a home. Some people could survive without money even. But practically nobody could survive without love, whether it's self-love or loving externally, finding your spouse, finding a love for money, something like that. So I think the event you're throwing along with these other coaches is going to be absolutely amazing. And hopefully a big success and a hit to not just like in a standpoint of like, oh yeah, like you sold a bunch of tickets per se, but just like it makes an impact on somebody's life. Like you said, these coaching sessions probably do cost a lot of money if you were to get them individually just for an hour. So I think it's such a beautiful thing that you're collaborating with other coaches and making an impact on this world, because that's all that really matters at the end of the day. I guess my final question would be, if people want to attend this event, other than the links where I'm going to be putting below, like where could they find you and where could they attend this event?
Yeah. Thanks so much, Ryan. Thanks for sharing the event link. And also, I do want to offer all of your listeners a special code for 10% off. So people can use the code DIVINEJOYCE. So DIVINEJOYCE. And otherwise, I can best be found on Instagram. I'm at Joyce Guan West, or on LinkedIn. And you can also search for Joyce Guan West. And I do also host regular groups on Clubhouse as well. And one of my favorite ones is today I kicked off my Self-Compassion Tuesdays. And that's just been really great. People come in and say, I've just been beating myself up over X, Y, or Z, like help. And there's a whole group of people to support and offer advice and tips and encouragement.
Yeah. just throw your affirmation out there in the world. Thank you for doing that. I really appreciate it. I'm going to put all of your links in the description below. And thank you so much for coming on, Joyce.
Yeah, thank you, Ryan. I really appreciate you and feel like this is the beginning of an amazing friendship. I really like your vibe and how you think about things. And you know, it feels really good to meet someone else who shares those values and those perspectives.
Oh, yeah, most definitely. We'll definitely stay in touch. And if I'm ever up there in San Francisco when COVID is over, we're grabbing drinks or something.
But sounds good.
For everyone listening, I appreciate you tuning in. Hopefully you were able to take something away from this episode, especially learning from Joyce's journey. And if you enjoyed her as a guest in this episode in general, feel free to leave a rating or review. Really helps the podcast out, spreads the word, and I appreciate it from the bottom of my heart. I'll see you guys later. Enjoy the rest of your day.